Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode needs no introduction. The legend himself, B-Real, from Cypress Hill. This episode was recorded over the phone on August 11th, 2021. All right, so sitting here with B-Real, he is the founder of Dr. Green Thumbs, both the retail as well as the farms and the insane line for cannabis here in the California market. I got to ask you, man, you know, being a legacy player in California, having seen the industry transition from the 215 days now into the Proposition 64 days, how has the journey been as an operator?
I mean, I think it's been tough for everyone making the transition because the types of rules and regulations that came in sort of were almost out of nowhere, and especially the taxation. So it's made it harder to operate, but those of us that have been doing it a long time, you know, we just sort of, you know, came on with the mentality that we have to adapt no matter what, no matter how hard it might be to let go of the way things used to be and how we used to operate. I mean, it evolves, and so you know, you have to get around the obstacles and find a way to navigate through it. And it's been tough, but fortunately our brand is strong enough and the quality of what we put out there in terms of the products we put out within the retail are strong enough that, you know, it's kept us out there and allowed us to maintain our place and our ability to grow. Even with all the, you know, all the hoops you got to jump through.
It's a lot of hoops, especially here in California.
Yeah, especially here in California. But you know what? In the end, it's worth it, you know, because once it's dialed all in and those of us that have, you know, taken the time to strengthen the brand and be a staple in the market, you know, I think we'll be fine once it all sort of settles out. It's still a young industry and you know, a lot of flaws in the legislation, but I'm sure that at some point, a lot of us will figure out that we need to create a lobbyist group to go lobby for us to make this industry fair for all of us, for the consumer and for the operator.
Right. And we recently saw the BCC become, you know, now the Department of Cannabis Control here in California. Are you hopeful that regulations will slightly get better here in the state, or, you know, do you think there's
going to be worse? I think eventually they will get better because I think they see what the possibilities are with this industry and how much revenue it creates in jobs.
A lot of jobs.
And I think they're beginning to see that now. So I think at some point it'll even out for us. It's just right now we're still going through the bumps and bruises because it's still, you know, it may have been here since, you know, let's just say the shops have been around for over 10 years. We know that. But we're still just getting everything settled out here because we don't have legalization across the United States yet. So we're still in that, you know, that, not necessarily a gray area, but it's a fine line we walk here, right? And I think until it's legally legal across, you know, all states, you know, and it's federally legal, I think then you'll start seeing some of these regulations and some of these taxations come down, and it'll start to even out for us. How long that's going to take, I don't know, but, you know.
You saw Chuck Schumer introduce the federal legalization bill. You
right.
Had a little bit cold interception, you know, from reception from, you know, the federal level. Obviously, Democrats are kind of split on how to do legalization. Republicans are historically against legalization.
But, you know, what's crazy is that they say that, but there's a lot of Republicans invested in the cannabis industry. On the hush tip, they don't want to, you know, be known and be seen, but they're in there. And so it's kind of hypocritical that, you know, you have one side who wants to go in there and figure it out, and the other side that, you know, that have people already invested in some of these companies, you know, acting like, oh, well, no, we don't want to touch this, when they're already got their hands in it. Right.
Are you hopeful for like a, maybe a two-thirds majority state override of the federal government, or do you actually think that a federal bill is possible?
I think it's possible. I think by this time they all know the revenue that this creates and the opportunities that come from it. I mean, you know, there's not another industry that creates the revenue out of nowhere like cannabis did. And at the same time, in California, there's no other industry taxed like cannabis.
Or regulated. I mean, even the alcohol industry doesn't even close.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous when you think about it. But, it, you know, it takes all of us that are in this industry to create, you know, a lobby for us. Because if they let the pharmaceutical companies and alcohol and tobacco companies come in, they have immense lobbyist groups to come in and change the tide however they need it changed, right? The cannabis industry needs to do that before someone comes in and does it for them.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. And I mean, as an operator here in the space, you know, who's also a retailer, I mean, you're kind of touching all sides of it. From your grow, from your retail side, and also from your, you know, actual packaging distribution partners. What has been the hardest part about the growth strategy? I know that you, when you originally opened your store in Sylmar, I think that was in 2018, you now expanded to downtown Los Angeles. When you're looking at the landscape of California, you're saying, I want to get into this or I want to get into that. How does that determination get made, and what's the strategy and where to go and why?
Well, we just figure out where we think our strong points in California are, and you know, try to plant the flag there. Right. You know, based off of, you know, the fact that I've had a 30-year music career with Cypress Hill and my own stuff and other things that I've done, we know where there is a base, to you know, so to speak, and so we try to figure out, okay, where we got the strongest base at. And we try to go from there. Now, other opportunities come up, and if we feel like, yeah, they're in the right location, they'll get the right traffic, and they're far enough away from one of the other locations, yeah, we might consider it. But, yeah, we try to, you know, strategically be in the places we know we can do well in.
Well, it is.
Not just open up somewhere just because we can.
Well, and it's interesting, too, saying that because, you know, being somebody who's been in Southern California your whole life and seeing, you know, the 215 days, especially in the Valley of Los Angeles, you saw, you know, dispensaries kind of stacked on each other. You know, now it's kind of been a little bit more spread out. But when you're looking at the totality of the United States as a whole, a lot of markets have opened up since California's Proposition 215 days.
Yeah.
Has there been any market that's excited you outside of California that you've ever thought about possibly expanding into?
Well, I like the fact that New York is now opening up. New York, I thought, would be one of the first because there is, you know, it's, you know, where everything, where every trend starts, from business, fashion, entertainment, most of it starts on the East Coast in New York. So I would have thought they would have been sort of ahead of it, but you know, I think they were waiting to see what it looked like for us here on the West. And now, you know, they've opened up to have recreational cannabis, and soon enough there'll be shops down there. That's exciting because we have a great base down there. You know, my career started pretty much in New York. We're a West Coast group, but Cypress Hill got its break in New York, so, you know, we had maintained to keep our fan base, you know, constantly engaged down there by throwing events every year down there up until the pandemic started. So it's exciting to hear that because we know that if I opened up a Green Thumb shop there, there would be immediate impact. And also places like Chicago and in Florida. That definitely exciting, and Michigan, you know, which is, you know, right now we're based in California, but we want to, you know, turn it into an MSO and get into the different states. But those would definitely be key: Chicago, New York, Florida.
And becoming an MSO is huge for cannabis brands, especially being here in California, because you know, with California, at least when it comes to cannabis, tends to be the trendsetter. as far as what strains become popular and as far as, you know, what types of technologies for concentrates. If you had a timeline for a type of expansion, would you look at 3-5 years out, or are you trying to do something in the next 1 to 2?
Yeah, in the next 1 to 2. It's coming sooner than later. For us, we wanted to take our growth sort of, you know, slower in terms of what we started, as opposed to try to rush and get all these stores open too quickly, because, you know, you got to meet the demand.
Right.
And, you know, so before you go out there and you expand to all, you know, to these different places, you have to have all the relationships in place in terms of the cultivations in each area.
Right.
And, you know, getting your genetics into the hands of the cultivators that you vet out to actually cultivate your brand in that region, you know, whether you partner up or it's a licensing deal. So you sort of have to get all that in place. So for us, it's, you know, we've been doing that now for a while we've been sort of settled here with the 6 shops that we have. We're opening up a couple more later on in the year. San Diego probably being the next one. But, you know, we've been trying to, like, get our team on the same page and make sure that we have our game plan right before that expansion. Right. But we've been doing that for quite a while now. So we're looking at 1 to 2 years as opposed to 3 to 5.
Well, and that's important to make sure that your standards of practice are all laid out, because, like you said, you know, when you're going to other states, you're dealing with other people who have their own licenses and you're trying to do that kind of a deal. One of the biggest problems with that is quality assurance.
Right.
Like making sure that people are up to your standards here in California.
Right.
When you're possibly going to look at a particular partner, a particular licensing deal, what are some of the key points that you look at and you say, hey, this is the guy that I need to do the deal with?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much have to check out the quality of what they have with what's in their farm at the time, right? Because you can't base it on what they can do with what you have, because they haven't touched it yet, obviously. So, you know, you look for someone who is... So if you do it in-house, you have your own formula. You have your own, you know, SOPs for your cultivation. We do, because, we've been doing this for a long time, and we're pretty much vertical in that way. We're self-sufficient. So we're looking at it like, how close is this to what we do? And how, you know, what's, you know, our cultivators go and maybe spend some time with them in their cultivation and see exactly what they're doing. How different is it from what we do? Are they adaptable? Can they switch over to our SOPs, and will they? You know, because some guys are very set in what they know, and they don't want to go outside of that. But you look for guys that definitely, you know what they're doing, and that are flexible, that are willing to, you know, they see the big picture. Okay, I might have to adjust over here in these particular rooms, but their SOPs work. I'm going to try them. I'll do what I do over here. You know, you try to look for guys that are knowledgeable, talented, and flexible. And the other thing for us is that we have a system called THC Controls. And if we were to partner up with anyone or do a licensing with the genetics, we would ask if they would put in the system. And that way we can monitor from here all, you know, the SOPs and everything they're using, if they're... what they're doing, what they're not doing, so that we can sort of supervise what they're doing with our genetics. Not everybody would be willing to do that, because, you know, it is an expense. It's an extra expense. But for us, you know, it's everything, because that's one way that we can maintain the quality control by seeing what they're doing through this particular system. A lot of cultivations have a control system, but this one's pretty thorough in terms of red flagging if someone's, you know, doing too much of this or not enough of that, and and it allows you to really control space and get on it quickly. And pretty much it's to collect data on each room, what every room's doing, what, you know, everything that's happening in the room. So if this room came out better than this room, we would record the data on what we did right and the data on what we did wrong so that we can fix this room, right, and get it to the scale of this room here. And, you know, that's one way that we try to maintain control. If they're open to take that system and put it in, that way we can sort of monitor. But, you know, and those that don't want to do that, they don't want to have a system in place. I mean, you just sort of have to, again, find the right guy who's knowledgeable and flexible. You know, that's because that's everything. If someone won't bend, you can't really work with them. And most likely they're going to change something. And it's not going to be the experience that people expect when they open the bag or the jar or whatever it is. And that's important, you know, the consistency of the quality.
Yeah, I mean, you can always have different phenotypes, but, you know, you always want to maintain at least a standard of quality for all of your products across the board.
Yeah, you know, because for us, we're a brand that could get called out on that easily, because realistically, people come in from different parts of the country to come to a Dr. Green Thumbs here to experience the flavor, right? The flavors, or just, you know, have that California experience and visit a dispensary. And you know, for us, we have a lot of people that come in from different parts of the country, and some even from out of the country. And they're all expecting an experience in these bags, right? So, like, if we open up in a place that had a, you know, a number of consumers that have flown to California and had some of our flavors, and they walk into one of these places that's now in their state, and they, you know, buy one of those bags, and it's not like what they have in California, they are speaking on it immediately. Yeah. And that word spreads around. Oh, I'm not, if it's not like that, I don't want it. And they're most likely to buy something else or go somewhere else. So, you know, we try to be very careful about that.
That authenticity, yeah, that authentic experience, you know, coming from California cannabis and going over into other states, you're right. You kind of want that McDonald's type of approach where if you had a great experience here, you're going to have that repeated experience everywhere else that you take that right. brand. I mean, and your brand is great. You know, I've been smoking on it. Definitely. One thing that is an approach that is kind of different than a lot of other brands on the marketplace is that you guys kind of have fun with your packaging and your design. It's very poppy, very colory, just, you know, depending on what strain that you're putting out. When you're trying to figure out exactly what designs that you want to put on your packaging in order to reach that consumer, what kind of thought process goes into that?
Well, you know, we do a lot of the R&D ourselves. We smoke the flower and we feel like, okay, what does this feel like? Or what is, you know, what does it taste like? What is the vibe? And, you know, we go from there. It's much like music. When you hear a certain beat, it might take you on a certain direction in how you write the song. And that's where, and then that's where the vibe is created. So it's sort of the same thing when we have a new genetic or different phenomes of new genetics or whatever, and we're trying to find the right one, and we come across the one we think is right, then, you know, we'll all sit around and roll one up. Everybody rolls their own. We don't fuck around and share it over here. You know, and we all come up with ideas and try to figure out, okay, what sticks? What makes sense for this? You know? And pretty much that's how we've done it. And we've been able to come up with some very great strains with bags to complement them, you know. And because we know, you know, if it's sitting on the shelf and it's like a plain Jane ass bag, it's not going to go. You can have the best weed in the world in there, but if the bag doesn't pop, if the bag doesn't say something, it's like a song. If all you got is the beat, but the song says nothing, and it's not good words over the beat, it doesn't resonate. You know, there's no impact. But when you have something to complement the other, that's everything. So, you know, when something catches your eye on the shelf, and then you say, hey, can I check that bag out? And they bring you the sample of what's in that bag. And, the first smell you take of that, the aroma from that bag, it should be a compliment to what you just saw. I'm like, oh, man, that packaging is fucking fire. Hold up. Let me check it. Bah! You know, and that's everything. So, you know, for us, it's always got to be complimentary of one another, you know, because we went through that. We went through that problem of making a bag that represented our brand, right? It was our first bag. It was a black bag with gold or yellow hints in it. And it was our Insane OG bag. And it was a cool fucking bag. But in trying to sell other flavors in it, other than that OG, it became hard because then now it's become a generic bag. And so when you got a bag that's your OG and then you got all these other exotic flavors in that same bag, they can't determine what's what. They're just going to pick this bag, and at some point they might just leave it all alone because they think, oh, it's all just one flavor, so you know what, let me try this over here. And sometimes they'll just ignore the bag when it's like that, you know? So we figured, you know what? We cannot just have, like, one bag for our flavors. People are used to seeing a flavor have its own bag, like, individualized. Our shit can be branded all through it with our Insane logo all through every bag. But the flavors got to have their own personality, their own distinction, you know, and we realized that right there was everything because, I mean, we would have fire in some of our you know, regular branded bags, and we'd ask the dispensary, okay, so what's going and what's not? And all of our branded bags that had the flavor on them, like this great bonsai, those were all moving. But our other bags that had, you know, just as fire strains in them as that particular bag, those were not moving. And it's because those bags didn't tell a story. Those bags didn't say anything to people. And we realized that if it's not in a jar and it's in a bag, it's got to have some sort of appeal.
Has there ever been a strain where you thought that it was quality but not quite quality enough, or maybe you just haven't gotten to releasing it? Has there ever been like that strain that just got left behind?
Oh yeah, plenty. Yeah, I mean, you know, we get a bunch of genetics and we try to run them through, and they'll smell great, they'll look great, but sometimes they won't produce great. Sometimes they look great and smell great, but they don't taste great or they don't have impact. But like if you were growing it for your personal, it would be awesome. You know, because you might like it, but it might not be the thing. So yeah, there's been a lot of good strains that have gotten left behind for one reason or another. But you know, we feel that the strains that we put ahead of those were the ones, because I mean it was shit we would actually buy if someone else were producing it, right? Like we do, we would definitely buy a lot of the strains that we chose up over the ones that we've left behind. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be that. It's just like writing music. When you're creating an album, you might write 30, 40 songs, but you're only going to use 12 of them most likely. So you have all those, you got to pick the winners, you know, what all makes sense in your group of songs, you know, what song complements the other and so on and so forth. So it's the same thing with this. You know, just this, are these genetics going to hold up with our other ones? If not, then, you know, kick them to the back.
For the ones that don't have the yield but have everything else that you want, have you ever thought about releasing your own seed lines, you know, as a breeder?
Yeah, I mean, we've thought about that. Well, I believe we'll get to that point, at some point in the next couple of years. Right now we're just, you know, sort of dealing with the expansion and trying to keep up with our volume. And as we, you know, expand beyond California, you know, keeping up the volume there. But yeah, I would believe that at some point in the next few years, seeds will be the next thing for us. you know, of strains that we might let go of. You know, we might stop producing this strain, but if people want it, we'll put out the genes for them. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that for people that haven't tried your Insane Line, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal flavor, terp profiles, and cannabinoid content's off the charts. So if you want to check it out, make sure to go to insane.og on Instagram to go ahead and make, you know, take a look at that, as well as, you know, obviously Green Thumb,
yeah.
Dr. Green Thumbs. I do want to ask, though, you know, being somebody that's been in the industry for so long and has tried so many different flavors, has there ever been one particular one that you say is your go-to as a constant?
It used to be, my go-to used to be OG Kush all the time. I mean, we were Kush snobs. Our circle would not smoke anything else. And it wasn't until one of my boys from West Coast Cure, JP, we were in the Bay and we had just run out. We were on tour. We had just run out, so I made a call. I said, hey, you got anything? You got any OGs? Oh, yeah, I got this Tahoe OG. I said, what else do you got? Just out of curiosity. Oh, I got platinum cookies. I said, I've been hearing about these cookies. Let me try that. And he brought those. And since then, after that, it opened up the door for me to try different flavors. So it's, you know, I've gone through all these different flavors, man. But I don't know. I think the go-to right now is our Mac 11. That shit is just fire. And then our very new one, which is Mamba Juice. That one, the genetics were produced by Seed Junkies, and we collaborated with them on this farm by us, and it is just amazing. That shit sold out so fast. But yeah, for me, I used to just like the straight up impact of OG, and to me there was no flavors that matched it, you know, at its peak. But now there's so many flavors out there. They might not be as impactful, but the flavor's there, and for me, I like that, you know, because you can get high off a lot of these strains right now. Will you get as high as OG? Probably not. But if you smoke enough of one, you might eventually reach that. So for me, I like smoking flavors. So yeah, right now I would say Mamba Juice or Mac 11.
Mamba Juice or Mac 11, and you know, OG is definitely a legacy strain here in California. Being somebody from the 215 days, now in the 64 days, and looking towards the future of the industry, a lot of players have come in and out of the industry, especially a lot of celebrity brands. You know, you being one of the staples, obviously, you know, Burner being another staple, we mentioned cookies. Is there somebody who hasn't gotten into the industry that you feel is missing out by not being in yet?
That's a good question. Probably Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, yeah.
I mean, he did more of the advocate and activism role than anything, but you know, people knew him to be a stoner and an activist, obviously. Probably him. But you know, the thing is in this industry, these folks don't always connect with a celebrity brand, especially if they haven't been present. Woody had been present. You know, so I would think that they would accept his, you know, whatever offering he comes out with or were to come out with it, you know, people would get behind it. Others not so much because they, you know, their presence was never there. They weren't at the rallies. They weren't speaking up. They weren't using their platforms on the behalf of cannabis to, you know, create awareness or education or any sort of activism, and you know, the culture sees that. So when they see someone come in hasn't been vocal up till now, after the fact, they look at them as opportunists, and they normally don't get behind brands like that because they know that these folks usually will create products that no one wants in the first place.
Right.
They're coming in as a money grab because it's a great opportunity, but they didn't do the diligence. They let someone else drive this for them. And, you know, like, there's so many that went and got, they licensed out to these companies that didn't know what they were doing in terms of producing the product for them. So they would get, you know, the celebrities with the name would have like mid-grade or C-grade fucking, you know, cannabis or products out there in the market. And your real consumers that expect that good shit, you know, it'd be a one-time novelty buy. And before you know it, you don't hear about that brand anymore because no one wants it.
Well, and Woody Harrelson would be an interesting, I mean, because you're right. He's been around, I mean, the Cheers days even, he was out there at rallies promoting both commercialized hemp as well as, you know, legalizing cannabis. I wonder, like, you know, with all these people getting brought in to the industry, do you know if anybody's actually reached out to Woody Harrelson and been like, hey, man?
I would imagine, you know, he got reached out to by many. But I don't think that's an interest that he has. You know, I think he's an actor and he knows that that's what he does. If he has an interest in getting in cannabis, he will. I don't think he's interested at this point because he doesn't want to jump through the hoops. I mean, he's been engaged in this for a long time. So I think he knows, you know, the trials and tribulations that you're going to go through. And he just probably doesn't want to deal with it, I would imagine. Someone who was active as active as he was to not be in this industry, it's because he doesn't want to deal with all the fucking headaches. Because believe me, you know, as great as it is, it's a fucking headache sometimes.
You know, the one that surprised me, honestly, was Joe Rogan. Considering like what his podcast is, the Joe Rogan Experience. That seems like an easy product, you know, to the cannabis industry. I think that Woody Harrelson, definitely, you know, you're right. There are a lot of headaches, especially here in the California cannabis industry, but hopefully once federal legalization happens, maybe he'll feel a little bit more, you know, calmer getting in. You had mentioned last time we talked, I think when you opened up your Silmar store in 2018, that the one person you had never smoked with, and you wanted to, or at least in the hot box, was Woody Nelson. Or, I'm sorry, Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
That's still the same order?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we still haven't smoked or did anything, but I don't think he smokes anymore. I think he does edibles now. So I don't know if that one's going to happen, but it would be cool to, like, smoke and hang out with Willie.
What if you did, like, an infused dinner? You could do that? I mean, if you did that too.
For me, you know, doing edibles isn't the same as smoking. I mean, you know, it gets you sort of there, but for me, it's not quite the same, you know. I enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it as much as I do, you know, smoking one.
We get the whole olfactory, you know, the entourage effect of the actual terpene profile along the full spread of cannabinoids. Usually, you know, a lot of edibles are made with distillate. When you're looking at the future of the brand, what does that look like for you?
Well, you know, just trying to maintain, you know, our quality and maintain our growth, really, you know, and making sure that we're doing our part to do it right and to be consistent in that. And just to keep growing. I mean, you know, plant a flag where we don't have one so that people can have this experience. You know, that's been everything. Is just giving people a different experience, and with coming into the shop, the way you feel about when you come into the shop, and then the bags that you take out of the shop, whether they're our bags or another brand that's top shelf. You know, we want people to leave with a good feeling, and you know, if we can do that everywhere that allows cannabis to be, you know, sold legally in these shops, you know, we want to put our brands there. So, yeah, it's just about maintaining growth and quality in the brand.
We would like to thank BeReal for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about Insane OG Cannabis on Instagram @insane.og. or find out more about Be Real Studios at www.bereal.tv. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.